And I thought, done all right.
Yeah. So what makes it seasonal? Because of cutting down trees, that process? Or what about mulch makes it? Or just selling it, side of it?
Yeah, selling it. Okay. The mulch business is 80% of the mulch is sold in about less than 90 days.
Right, yeah.
And so you work all year and build inventory, and you have money and all that grinding and all that stuff, and then you'd start coloring the 10th warm day. The 10th day, because the first 4 or 5 days people walk around, the next 4 or 5 days landscapers, to make money, start doing their commercial stuff. Yeah. Like all the McDonald's and all the Wendy's and all that.
Right.
And
downtowns and stuff.
Yeah. And then the homeowner wakes up about Memorial Day and they start doing it. Another cool thing I thought about this red mulch that I've been proud of, people in the country, no one mulched. If you lived on a farm, you didn't mulch stuff.
Yeah.
You just didn't. But when this red mulch came out, I could drive around houses of people I grew up with, farm people, and to see that red mulch around a barn or around a grain bin, or it was just so satisfying.
Yeah.
Just great.
Does it feel like as big of a deal as it actually is? Like, do you feel that intensity of how far how huge of a success it was?
It's worldwide now.
Yeah.
And it's the norm for mulch. It's quickly becoming I always said that you think red's big, when you start coloring brown and black, then you're competing with natural products that you can't keep any consistency in color.
Right.
If you can make a consistent color and get a consumer trained to that, you've got something. And, you know, I'd always Pioneer marketed things. No one ever bought recycled pallets. I got that started, in my area at least.
Yeah.
No one would buy red mulch. I would call Bennett's Greenhouse at Lafayette, and I'd say, hey, I need 2 pickup truckloads of red mulch. And they'd say, well, we don't handle that. Okay. The next day I'd have my office girl call there. A week later I'd stop by with samples.
Genius.
Yeah. Well, we've been getting some calls on that. Oh, really? Yeah. I did that.
Oh, my gosh.
I would, every town I went in, I tore the yellow pages out for the landscaping, M for mulch, even yard work. So I had, you know, clipboards I'd drive to Fort Wayne. To get information when you didn't have computers, you did it old school.
Yeah.
So I drove to Fort Wayne. I'd hit 3 or 4 towns, you know, along the way, and I'd just tear out, I'd go to a phone booth, and I'd tear out the yellow pages I wanted and staple them together.
That's so cool. And just genius.
Yeah.
Like that method.
And then when I needed to find wood at factories, you drive by a building, sure, they have waste wood, but I wanted people that ran saws and cut stuff.
Right.
So I would always park along the edge of the property. They all had railroad tracks, and anyone can walk on railroad tracks. And I would look for these things called dust collectors on the side of the building.
Yeah.
And that told me they sawed a lot of lumber. Then I would risk climbing the fence or sneaking in from the rail side, and I would look inside their dumpsters and see how much wood they had. Then I'd walk in the door like I owned the place. I knew that prospect could save 10-15 grand a year and getting rid of their wood waste. They just had to haul it, have me come get it.
Yeah.
It was the easiest thing in the world. I just couldn't get enough.
Only because you have that incredible mind, though.
It's kind of like selling 13 ears of corn for 65 cents.
Yeah.
You know?
That's just so incredible that's how your mind works, though. And it's probably just seems so normal to you. But that, like, you figure all that out just makes sense that way. To jump to the.
But to pioneer not
just doing things how they've always been done.
I was. I was worried about inventory and failing, and you know, I would second mortgage my house over the winter to make payroll.
Yeah.
And it was just it was gut-wrenching, but that allowed me to observe more. One morning I was in Indianapolis at a McDonald's, and I didn't have a first appointment till 9 or 10, and it was like 7:30 in the morning. And what did I see drive through the McDonald's in the morning early? All these mowing crews and all these landscape guys, and they were all driving up and getting drive-up window food with all their mowers and their crap in the back. And I went up and I met the manager, and I said, I would like to, this is my product. It's 100% recycled. McDonald's was big and recycled, and I'll do your whole restaurant for free. All you have to do is have my cards in the window to drive up. And they said, sure. And so I met the guy that did the landscaping. I colored a load of mulch. I gave it to him. And it was like $1,000 worth of mulch at the time. And a semi-load. And the guy would say, you know, I can't believe you're able to do this. I really appreciate it because we don't have to pay for it this year. And I was like, you know what? If this don't work this spring.
Wait, why didn't they have to pay for it?
Because I gave it to him.
Oh, you didn't charge him. Oh, okay. No.
And
right, because okay.
And I told him, I said, if this product doesn't take off, I'm gonna have a lot of free stuff because I can't eat it. I gotta get rid of it. And that started off Indianapolis was doing two McDonald's, and then a regional McDonald's guy called, and we supplied mulch for every McDonald's from about Bloomington to up around Gary. And then the Burger King guy who's out of South Bend, his name was Mr. Fitzpatrick, and I think it's called Family Dining, or it's a big business now. We did all the Burger Kings from this area all the way to Kalamazoo. Like, I don't know, it was 60 some Burger Kings.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you create a demand.
Right.
First you have to make a supply, and then you create a demand, and then you artificially short and say, God, I don't think I can get that many loads out. I can get it to you, but, you know, it's $200 a load surcharge to get you in this year. And people, you know, and the truth was, I had more than I know what to do with.
Yeah.
But that was fun. Playing around like that was just a blast. And one day I got to Bristol, and there were 40 semis backed up, about 15 or 20 in the lot, and they were all the way down Highway 15, and there were state cops there. Those trucks came from Detroit, Ontario, Canada, Portland, Maine.
Why then? Why that day?
It was word got out that we had this product, and people wanted it. And they would, so that's when it became evident to me, I don't need to be in the mulch business. I need to be in the colorant business.
Right.
And I tried to streamline. You know, I went from 60 employees in the pallet business down to 24 guys in that business. And in my colorant business, we got it down to about 14 or 15 employees. But we were coloring millions of bags of mulch every year. We weren't doing it.
You would just sell it to people who were doing what you did before.
Yeah. I got my patents issued.
Which would that have been? No, that wouldn't have been the people that bought it. How did you find all those people that were doing what you were doing before?
No one was doing what I was doing.
So how'd you get them to do it?
What started it outside of Bristol in central Indiana were the people that lived up here that were snowbirds and moved to Florida in the winter, wealthy people, and guys that were hauling RV trailers down to Florida to dealers would come in and fill their truck bed up with red mulch. Then they'd tow a new trailer down to Sarasota, and they would take that to their father-in-law's house, who had a trailer in Florida, and he wanted it. Then those landscapers start asking him where he got it. They'd call the guy. Then that guy, instead of hauling RVs to Florida, would start hauling loads of mulch. Just mulch.
That's crazy.
And then people would call and say, you know, who are you and how do you do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll never be able to do that again. I will never be able to do that again in business. It was just the right time.
Yeah, really.
The right place. And taking the risk and getting the reward.
So how did you make such a big business just out of colorant? What made that take 14 people in?
We bought, to give you an idea, there was a 160-year-old paint company in South Bend called Fuller O'Brien, and they got bought out by Valspar. They used around, I'm going to make this up, but probably 30, they used around 30 semi-loads of, the coloring part of any paint is something like white's titanium, red's iron oxide. If you took all the oxides that they used in a year, and they had 250 people making paint, we bought that much material in about 20 days.
Oh, wow.
We became one of the largest buyers of iron oxide in the country, period. And that draw of the raw material we were buying bought in people like Bayer was the largest producer of iron oxide in United States. But just during that time when we were doing that and gearing up and making all this colorant, I got in contact with someone who was going to China, and I had him find me a Chinese man, you know, again, before the internet. Got on a plane, flew to China, drove all over, came back 5 weeks later and said, I found someone that's going to make you iron oxide. I was paying $1.60 a pound stateside, and I was now buying it for 30 cents a pound delivered from China.
Oh, wow.
And I used 40,000 pounds a day. So the savings were astronomical.
Yeah.
And and it allowed me to make my product even stronger in strength and make it more like a stain.
Yeah.
The difference between stain and paint is how much of the colorant is in there, the part that makes it a color, and it's also on how finely it's ground.
Yeah.
And we ground it really fine and loaded it. And we made black, gold, brown, and red.
Did you have blue and green?
That was for the Olympics.
Okay, that was just for that.
Yeah. The Olympic rings.
So cool.
NBC had a shot of the opening of the Olympics, and there were these huge colored rings. They were 60-foot circles that were, I believe, 5 foot wide, and they were the Olympic rings out in front of the main stadium.
Yeah.
And that was done in our colorant. Yeah, we made them in Olympic colors. It had to go through quite a process to get approved. I mean, the Olympic
That's
committee
so cool.
had to approve that. Yeah, that was the first time I went to Sydney.
So how'd you get a hold of Olympic people?
My guy in Sydney said, I'm landscaping the entire Olympic Village.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And I've got this idea. Do you think you can do it? Because they were thinking about doing it out of stone or pouring concrete and painting that color. And he was trying to sell them on the natural aspect of this. And he did it. I got it.
Yeah.
Yep. Flew a helicopter. We went off of radar on purpose. We flew, this guy was flying a helicopter. We flew under the Sydney Bridge that you always see people walk across.
Yeah.
We flew over the top of the, it looks like a shell. It's the Olympic. Opera House. And we headed over to the Olympic Stadium. And the guys from their air traffic controllers were going, you know, yeah, Tango 7898, you're off radar, mate. Where are you at, mate? And he just would garble and hit his radio like he was having troubles. And we flew, when we were there, they were bolting the seats down in the stadium. A couple hundred people were working in there. And there were papers stuck on all these seats, probably, I don't know what they were, instructions or whatever. We came up over that stadium, over the top of it, and came down in it in the helicopter. I could see flush with the top of the stadium, and paper and shit was going everywhere, and people were flipping us the finger, and were mad. And then we got out, flew back over the Opera House, went back underneath the bridge, and got up to about 1,000 feet, and then he started saying he was making his approach back to the landing pad. And he had trouble.
So wait, why did you land in there?
We didn't land in there.
Oh, you just got close.
He just said, you want to see something cool? And I said, yeah. He goes, all right, I'll show you the inside of the stadium.
That's so cool.
And we just flew right over it. They didn't have the circles done, but all the red mulch was all around, everywhere really? Around that. Oh, yeah. It was fabulous. And he just flew up over and went down inside the stadium just to give me a good look of it. We were like even with the press boxes, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
So what made you want to not do it anymore?
I was the only salesman, and I had gambled so much that to make my next step in that business, I needed to really, really grow that business and leverage the assets I had to borrow the money I needed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I went from borrowing $100,000 to $300,000 the next year to $600,000. The fourth year I borrowed $1.2 million. And I had to pay all that back within 8 months. Your account's got to be zero, or they don't start over again. And I had the right people around me to get it done, but they were all getting burnt out because it was a high-stakes game. I mean, I would leave home on Sunday and fly to a city, and I would be getting leads in on Monday and Tuesday and then fly to that city. I didn't even know I was going to be going there when I left home Sunday.
Yeah.
Some guy in Dallas wants to see me, so I'd go to Dallas, you know. And after doing that for a couple years, it got old.
Yeah.
And I really didn't want to see it fail because of my inability to manage.
Yeah.
And I needed more facilities, more employees, more brain power. And I had great brain power help me set it up. You know, my cousin Randy set up all the mechanical parts of the plant, and his brother Gary had done stuff while we had a short, brief period of partnership. So I mean, I had a lot of things helping me out. I was tired.
Yeah.
I went in business when I was 18 and I was 39.
Yeah.
And I didn't stop for a minute. You know, my mind did not turn off.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't do it forever. Yeah. And I really thought business success and financial success is one thing, but if you can be home and grow up around your children.
Yeah.
That's priceless.
Yeah.
And I got to do that.
Yeah.
I didn't have to go anywhere except take you to school and mm-hmm. have you convinced that I could change streetlights. You know, all the crazy stuff and fun stuff we did.
Yeah.
It gave me that opportunity. I wouldn't pass that up for nothing.
I'm so lucky that I got to have that.
I'm lucky I got to have you. I mean that.
I love
you. I love you too. Okay, I'm done talking.